Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the Political Center, and this is a special edition of Both Sides of the Aisle. I am so excited to have two guests with me, the Policy Prize winners at the Wilk Summit, Sarah Wright, CEO and the founder of Utah Clean Energy. Welcome, Sarah.
Pleasure to be here.
And Glade Soward, who is a 20-year veteran, I think I've got it right, of the Division of Air Quality, and now works in energy and climate for Salt Lake City, and he has the Distinguished Climate Prize Award here. So nice to have you, Glade.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So this isn't going to be a left and right so much as just an informed conversation. I've had the privilege of working with both of you a lot. Sarah, I want to just start with you and have you reflect a little bit about what makes this state unique. How have you been able to make such a difference in Utah?
What makes us unique is that you can make things happen. There's really one degree of separation from leaders making decisions, but I think this is not just Utah, but we all have more in common than we think.
Yeah.
We all care about our families, our communities, our kids, and who doesn't want clean air and a stable climate? And those are the things that when you can communicate, as you spoke about this morning, as we can have those conversations to really drive solutions and meet people where they are.
Yeah, I love this one degree of separation. We used to use this saying that Utah is big enough to be sophisticated, but small enough to still get things done. I'm kind of
Agreed.
Seeing that. Yeah, yeah. Glade, how about from your observations? What makes Utah, what differentiates us?
I think it's this spirit that you can be solution driven. I mean, it is a conservative state. There's no denying that. But I've just seen time and time again, people look at the facts, look at the goal we're striving for, and find ways to move forward.
Yeah, and you would see Utah's quite data-driven, I'm guessing, from what you
yes,
said there.
Yeah.
Yes. So I've had the privilege of working with you on data, and you know this as well, Sarah, but Glade is a data expert and has been able to pull together a history of air quality indicators and the like for our state that's done in a way that really helps decision makers. I think this is one of the reasons you got this award.
Yeah, thanks. I love data. My first job at the energy office was actually compiling the paper energy statistical abstracts for the state, which sounds
hard-bound
pretty dry.
Is another way to say that.
Right. It's a dry thing, but you start to learn a lot just by looking at the numbers. And I think you can tell stories with the numbers.
Sarah, you've also distinguished yourself by being able to penetrate the decision hierarchy of the state. You've done that a lot through some partnerships with business leaders. I wanted you to just comment on the business sector in this state, and then I'll have a follow-up, at least a perspective from my point of view.
Well, I can speak to the Climate and Clean Air Compact, which was our most recent work that we actually worked with you, Natalie, on in the beginning. But I think that it gets back to that these business leaders see these solutions as economic, as in the best interest of our communities, and they are willing, many of our business leaders in Utah are willing to use their voice, and we need leaders using their voice to counteract the very, it's really a vocal minority that is saying that we shouldn't take actions on climate and clean air and the lake.
Okay, so that sets me up nicely for what I wanted to add, and I'd love you guys to comment on this if you want, but this is a one-party state with a veto-proof majority in the legislature in that regard. We do have a Salt Lake City mayor and a Salt Lake County mayor that represent large populations and, you know, on a different side of the aisle, but I find that the check on power in this state is not so much the Democrats as it is the business community. Why do I say that? The business community is very pragmatic, very can-do, very solutions-oriented, very non-ideological. And so I find that some of the greatest progress in our state occurs when you work jointly with a Republican-dominated state and a business community that's can-do. You guys want to react to that?
Well, I'd say that it's really the only way we've gotten things done in Utah. People from other states will look at and say, how did you do that in Utah, one of the most conservative states? And it really was working with the business community. And many of the issues that we work on at the legislature, I will say it's gotten a little harder the last few years, they pass almost unanimously because if you bring along key leaders, others will follow.
Mm-hmm. Glade, what have you observed?
From my perspective, and I think I can say this now that I don't work for the state,
yeah.
So when I worked for the division.
You were like a career service employee, though,
yeah,
right? Not so much
service,
a political appointee, but more of a...
Correct. Yeah. So, and we kind of have to check our politics at the door. And I was with the Division of Air Quality for 20 years and 8 years at the Energy Office for before that. So yeah. It's been... I'm not used to being able to sort of express my opinion in the political arena.
This is your chance on both sides of the aisle to hear from Clayton Soward.
Well, what I can say is that, you know, sometimes we would have a bill run or someone who would be coming after, say, the Division of Air Quality on an issue or pushing something that's ideologically driven. And time again, it was actually the business community who said, hang on a second, we need this stuff to work. We need this regulation to make sense and could come in some ways partner with us and maybe in certain times come to our rescue to make sure that we could move forward and actually get the job done and kind of move past the politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair. You know, I spent 18 years in state service, but I was always a political appointee. So you and I, we were in the same time but came from a little different points. Okay, I'm an economist by training. I want to talk about affordability. And, you know, it's looming large right now, not just because of gas prices, but how that gets passed on in other ways and how inflation's above target, all these kinds of things. How does climate affect affordability? And you guys can take that in whatever order you want, but what's the climate message when it comes to affordability?
Well, I will say that most of the solutions from the energy sector, which is where I focus, are more affordable than our other fossil fuel energy resources. And the volatility and costs that we're seeing right now, anything that we can decarbonize, what I call fuel-free resources, which are also risk-free as far as volatility, that helps with affordability. And the other thing around affordability is when we solve for any big problem, for development, for the data center, for affordability, if we can think with climate solutions in mind the whole way through, we can find the least cost, least risk solutions, not just for the current problem, but for the long-term problems. So I think that when people say we can't do this because it's not affordable, they're not looking at all the costs.
Yeah. Does that cover it, Glade?
It really does. I was going to say that just pretty much spot on what I would have said.
So. Okay, very good. So stay with you, Glade, and let's talk. You mentioned that you're no longer a career service employee and you're free. Tell us about data centers.
Well,
what do you observe there? I mean, just going from your background, you don't even have to go like your feelings or emotions about it, but you're an expert when it comes to emissions and, you know, air quality standards. Talk tech with us here.
Yeah,
technical.
Let me talk about the emissions part of it, because the proposals I've seen are for large natural gas fired data centers, and natural gas emits NOx, nitrogen oxides, and so, which is a precursor for our wintertime PM problem and for our summertime ozone problem. And we've made a lot of progress in the state reducing emissions. We've had Tier 3 vehicles and fuels from the federal side of things to help us get all these reductions happening. And then are we going to turn around and trade that back? We've asked folks just to do the smallest things, change their thermostat, or buy an electric lawnmower to help us reduce emissions. And now we have this opportunity to go forward with clean resources for whatever needs, whether it's data centers or our homes and businesses, and we're gonna trade that back. If I was a person spending $100 a year for my pickup truck that runs on diesel to have diesel exhaust fluid for nitrogen oxide controls, I'd be a little upset, I think, that I had been contributing to this. And so I think these are real concerns. I understand the need for economic development, but there are trade-offs, and folks have really, we've all kind of contributed to try to make our air quality better, and I just want to make sure we don't take a step back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could I chime in there as well?
Yeah, please.
So I think that
You're really independent at this point.
Yeah, I'm completely independent. This is, Friday's my last day, so. The thing I would say is we have developers in other places of the state, one that I know well in Eagle Mountain, they have been working on trying to work with big data center scalers, solar storage, and a little bit of natural gas to make sure that they have power the whole time. But they have hit hurdle after hurdle after hurdle. But then at the same time, we have this other project that's just trying to be sort of rammed through. And I think this is a chance for us to really say, okay, we want data centers. I think we're 6th or 7th based on your state already. Mm-hmm. We are taking our fair share. How can we do that with the least impact on our airshed, on climate, on water,
How you do it matters.
How you do it matters, and thoughtful progression matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Okay, I want to give you some hypotheticals. I know that's not fun, but let's do a couple. One is, and Sarah, let's stay with you and let you do it first. I wanted you to make your, like, you get, you know, 45 minutes with a senior group of legislators in this state, and you make the pitch on why climate matters, why climate policy matters. How do you do that in like 45 seconds? That's sometimes about what you get.
Yeah. The first thing I would do is I would bring in partners that they already know and will listen to. So who is the messenger makes a big difference.
This is a good communications point.
And then I would relate it to things that they care about, to their kids. And in the 45 seconds, you'll also have to answer some of the big concerns and maybe, or the big questions they have. But I would be set up to have that come afterwards so that they could, you know, move forward. 45 seconds isn't very much, but also to show that the solutions make sense now. They're here, they're available, they're economic, and, you know, it's going to propel us.
This is why you've been so successful in your role, is that you've been able to navigate with those kinds of principles. What would you say, Glade, if you had the 45 seconds? You come from more as a technical scientist background.
Yeah, you know, in previous remarks that not all the listeners will have heard, you mentioned the recent Artemis mission mm-hmm. to the moon, which was so inspiring. And my wife and I actually went back and watched The Right Stuff and Apollo 13.
You have
after
since
that,
then. Nice.
To
good
kind
for
of
you.
Geek out on it, right? So yeah. being
you
a
have
nerd.
Moon joy.
And yes. And one of the things that if folks remember from Apollo 13 is they have this crisis. There's an explosion with their system on the ship. And at some point, down on NASA, they go with a bunch of engineers and dump a bunch of parts on the table and say, you have to make this work. You have to get this air filter working again. And what I would say is we have all the parts. We have all the parts. We have affordable clean energy options. We have storage options. And why we're not using this is it's just a lack of will to do it.
Yeah. In these settings, the most common pushback, at least I always hear, is Utah can't make a difference. You know, that this is a global hemispheric issue, and we can go compromise our economy and we won't make a speck of difference. React to that, both of you.
Well, it's never, I don't know, probably everyone here is too young, but like people used to play chicken when they drive. And it's kind of like we're playing chicken. I never did it, but we're playing chicken with the climate system. And the other thing is Utah, I believe that Utah can be the conservative state that really changes the framework and changes the way that conservative states move forward on climate action. And this is an all-hands-on-deck problem. Mm-hmm. So to say we're not going to do anything because our neighbor isn't doing anything, we don't have infinite time to solve this problem. In fact, we are. It is an urgent problem.
Yeah, we're playing chicken. How do you do this, Glade?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, Utah, we mentioned before, is really good at problem solving. And we're in my current role at Salt Lake City, I'm working on a program to bring into fruition the Community Clean Energy Program. It's sponsored by Rocky Mountain Power and Utah Renewable Communities to bring clean energy options to several Rocky Mountain Power service communities throughout the state. And it's really innovative, and we've made a lot of traction. It's taken a long time, but we've reached some important milestones and hope to launch that program later this next year. And what I can say is people are watching. Our neighbor, we have folks in Idaho who have reached out to us, now in Wyoming. I'm speaking at an event tomorrow in Colorado. So people are saying this could be a model, and I think that they see that Utah is yeah. trying to find solutions.
Yeah. So we're at the Wilkes Climate Summit, and there's finalists for the Climate Prize, and they're sitting on the front row, and I'm smiling and seeing all of them, and they're hearing all this Utah talk, and I'm sure they're trying to track us. We keep saying we're special, we're different, all this kind of stuff. So I'm just going to do a little litany, just take the privilege as a co-host here to say that. So this is a state that led the nation in economic growth in 2025. This is a state that has the highest levels of upper mobility of any state in the country. This is a state that has the most equal distribution of any state in the country. This is a state that has the second most well-trained, well-educated workforce in the country, as measured by the percent of our adult population with a degree, high-value certificate, or diploma. This is a state that has the highest levels of social cohesion or social capital. We still prevent problems. We still solve problems. I hope I'm like getting you excited about Utah and you're feeling. I could keep going. We're the youngest state in the nation, which is where I want to go next with questions. But as the youngest state, we're tech savvy, we're affordable, innovative. So I hope that is meaningful to you. This, we have something special here, and we know it. Our biggest risk is how do we grow and change so fast and still keep what makes us so wonderful? Okay, so this is my next segue. We just got 4 minutes in this segment. This is a long segment. We'll do a very short one after this. I use this term youthquake, and what I'm referring to there is this state has the highest percentage of any state that are, you know, Gen Z, Gen Alpha. We're about 40% compared to like 32% nationally, something like that. I think of the courage, the vigor, the energy, the innovation of our youth here in Utah, and it really inspires me. I think it's part of the solution. And their sentiments are so forward-leaning when it comes to the environment. Do you guys agree with me? Do you see a youthquake as something special that could happen here?
You know, I remember back, Natalie, you and I worked on the Utah Roadmap. It was a climate initiative led out of the Kemsie Gardner Policy Institute. And my recollection was that the support for that initiative came from some concerned students who went to their legislators and sought that backing. And we saw leadership kind of coming up from
Utah legislature appropriated $200,000 to get a report on positive solutions in climate.
Yeah. And I just think that's an example of what you're talking about. The other thing I would say is I'm getting to be the old guy in this work, and the new crop of folks who are coming up are so talented.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sarah. I'd like to chime in just a little bit. I do, like, one of the first campaigns I worked on with Utah Clean Energy was with the University of Utah students. So I definitely agree that there's so much energy, but at the same time, there's a lot of despair. And so I think what they really need is we need to nurture those efforts that from the young people, and we need people like us and people that are empowered to have them see that we are taking action, that we are taking them seriously, because we don't want them to have to carry, you know, the earth on their backs. We need to step in.
Yeah. Who do both of you look to as leaders in this state to help, you know, get us to where we need to be? You have some favorite leaders, some mentors even to yourself?
Well, I was going to say Sarah. Not to embarrass you, but...
That's good. That's a nice compliment. And Sarah, that gives you a chance to talk about, you know, who your successor is and how that's going to be good. But go ahead.
Just real quick. I mean, every time one of these issues come up and when there's another opportunity to work and kind of move the needle on policy, I feel like I have a bat phone to Utah Clean Energy, and I'm constantly asking their staff for help. It's a big lift, and the award is amazing, but it's really a team effort.
Utah Clean Energy about 12 hours to get out a fact sheet on the data center. It's really helpful to people. Sarah, same question for you, and maybe you can talk about your successor.
So I think that, Natalie, I mean, I think that you have more to have more policymakers and people that really are in the middle and are willing to look at the facts and not just be partisan on these issues. And you're an example of that. I am super excited to have Sarah Baldwin Griffin.
Love it.
As the successor for Utah Clean Energy.
Sarah, there's something about the name.
Yeah,
they just keep in the momentum.
Sarah. But Sarah was with Utah Clean Energy from 2004 to 2014 and then worked at other national clean energy climate groups. And so she is perfect for the role. And we have an amazing team, as you mentioned. And I also want to say that we need more governors like Governor Huntsman at the time where he really, back in 2006, he rolled up his sleeves and he said, you know, my children talked to me about this issue and I learned more and then realized that we needed to take action. And I think that just taking action from what's right for our families, our communities, and the world, and really thinking from that lens while still keeping our economics moving.
Great. We're going to take a short break. Natalie Gochner with Glade Soward and Sarah Wright. Stay tuned, everybody. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Hi, everyone. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are live at the Wilkes Climate Summit. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and I have Glade Soward, who's a new recipient of a distinguished honor from a climate policy award from the Wilkes Center, and Sarah Wright, who's the Policy Prize Climate Leadership Award. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
In our first segment, we talked about all things climate and went through a few things. I want to just take a step backwards for a minute here and ask you to give advice. So let's think of it this way. We've had people in the room today from Utah 2034. This is the organizing committee for the 2034 Olympic Winter Games. And they have to be thinking about how does this state project well in the Olympic year. And a Great Salt Lake that's unhealthy, that's not giving us lake effect snow, that's a hemispheric issue that we're not paying attention to the environment when environment is a pillar of Olympism. So let's pretend like someone from the Utah 2034 comes to you, Sarah, in retirement and says, give me advice. What do you tell them?
You know, first I would say that we have to embody our climate and environmental systems as one of the main pillars of working for the Olympics. Our climate scientists on staff said this winter, and for those of you that aren't here, we had the worst winter ever. It's a postcard from the future. There was very little snow. And so we need to start leading in climate solutions and planning from that place. It's really about this is where we want to be and what are the steps that we need to take to get there and how can we share that message with the world so that they can follow and see this tiny little Utah is making changes that reduce their emissions to create a more stable climate for the rest of the world.
Yeah, very good. So basically, Utah needs to lead. For our out-of-state and out-of-country visitors, when Sarah represents our former governor, Governor Huntsman, this is the guy that was the ambassador to China under President Obama and the ambassador to Russia under President Trump. And I'm sharing that with you just to show you how unique this state is, that a former governor is that prominent to these two ambassadorships, but also gets those appointments from presidents from two different parties. Very interesting place this Utah is. Okay, Glade, your advice.
Just briefly, I think this is such an opportunity to be bold and visionary and to lead out and set an example. And there are other places that have innovated here and there that we can draw from. But we could. I think that, you know, this isn't the time for half measures when it comes to this very unique opportunity.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, last question. We just have just under 2 minutes left. We'll start with you, Glade. What gives you hope? What gives you hope? You've lived in this state as a policy leader for a long time. You're very smart on, you know, just the data, and you have a lot of great relationships. What gives you hope?
I think that just seeing the progress that's been made over the years, if you just isolated in the time we're at, you may not feel it. I remember when I was first a young person starting out in the energy office, solar prices were so high. And, we didn't have the emissions control devices and things that we have today. And slowly over time, through hard work and regulation and work on the part of the regulated community, we've gotten to where we've had real successes, in the air quality arena, and I think we can replicate that in the climate arena, and we just need to have the will to do it.
Yeah. Sarah, what gives you hope?
Well, one, we have no choice but to have hope and to have hope in action when you're dealing with a problem this big. But I would say that we have the technologies. We have new technologies coming up, and it was very exciting to learn those today, but just getting people behind it, and we have to talk about it and push our leaders because it's really easy to fall and be complacent. So hope and action.
Hope and action. And this, I'll just to give the political center a voice here, I like thinking of hope as a virtue, which means it's not optimism, it's not pessimism, it's not any of that. It actually, as a virtue, it requires intent and action to make it so. So I'm with you there. Okay, so congratulations to both of you. Thanks to the listening audience here. Natalie Gochner with Glade Soward and Sarah Wright. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks so much.